The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading the Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Anger. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. They believe every life is unique and deserves to be honored so that every funeral is as unique and special as the person it represents. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the headline, Faces to Watch in 2021. Many are beginning to call 2021 a pivotal year for education, healthcare, and the economy. That's why our 9 picks for people to watch are heavily tilted toward those sectors. And this is a special section within the Triangle Business Journal that starts with a note from the editor. We will look at the people who were followed in 2020. Note from the editor, how our 2020 watch list performed in a trying year. One could only imagine how things worked out at the end of 2020 for the people we chose to watch this past year. No one could have imagined our world turning upside down for most of the year as the coronavirus pandemic gripped the triangle, the state, the nation, and the world so fiercely that millions of small businesses failed and the ones that are still operating are struggling to survive. But there were a few notable events, few personal changes, few expansions among the 12 individuals we placed under the microscope last year. For example, 2020 happened to be Raleigh Mayor Marianne Baldwin's first full year in office. A proponent of smart growth, many developers embraced her new style. But around mid-year came the protests tied to racial justice, economic inequality, and police brutality following the death of George Floyd. There were protests for days that eventually led businesses to board up in downtown Raleigh. Some of those boards are still up. Baldwin was criticized for not acting fast enough or forcibly enough to protect local businesses. In the private sector, Pendo's Todd Olson, the Fallon Company's Zach Von Cannon, and Merge Capital's Chris Woody had a remarkable 2020 with all their expansion and development projects on schedule. We have identified 9 individuals to place under the microscope and follow their progress in 2021. From real estate to healthcare and from technology to education, these business and government leaders could make a long-lasting impact on our communities with decisions they will make this year. And we will be watching. That was written by Sugata Mukherjee, Editor-in-Chief, Triangle Business Journal. And first, a recap on the faces from watched in 2020. Arsheen Alam, founder and CEO, GoLeaf. In 2020, Alam was not much in the news, but it is clear that her company may soon get a big boost because of new policies about to be implemented that are tied to climate change. GoLeaf produces graphene through an eco-friendly process. Marianne Baldwin, mayor, City of Raleigh. From directing the process for the controversial Downtown South project to somewhat mangling the city's response to racial protests in 2020, Baldwin's plate was full, but she has most of her city council members' support so far that may also help move things along for citizens. Deb Boucher, executive director, Cushman & Wakefield. A Cornell University graduate, Boucher's focus on science and technology real estate meant things were less slow for her during the pandemic. Last year, she was at the center of the deal when BioMason announced a new headquarters building inside Research Triangle Park. Tom McCormick, chairman, Centennial Authority. McCormick was able to sign a 5-year extension deal with the Carolina Hurricanes. That means hockey will go on at the PNC Arena if the NHL season starts in the next 5 years. What McCormick needs to worry about now are the dwindling interlocal funds that may prevent arena upgrades. Laura Bunn, market president, First Horizon National. When the U.S. unleashed $550 billion plus on businesses through the PPP program, Bunn was ready. She and her team completed some $300 million in PPP loans, temporarily saving thousands of businesses. If there is another PPP deal from Washington, expect Bunn to be front and center. Jim Trogdon, former Secretary, NC Department of Transportation. Trogdon resigned from his post in February after controversy erupted over the department's dwindling cash balance that forced the DOT to suspend some projects. His office came under criticism from the state treasurer, which was publicly rebuked by the Cooper administration. Todd Olson, CEO, Pendo. The pandemic doesn't seem to have slowed down what Olson is building at the cloud-based SaaS firm. He announced a major expansion of Pendo's offerings with new offices in Japan and Australia. The startup describes itself as a unicorn with a market valuation in excess of $1 billion. Randy Ramsey, Chair, UNC Board of Governors. Ramsey was re-elected as the chair of the University of North Carolina system in 2020 and was busy trying to fill chancellor's slots. Calls for racial justice and an end to inequality across campuses will test Ramsey's leadership skills as he pushes forward new measures across the system. Kenny Gilbert, executive chef, Cut and Gather. As most would imagine, 2020 was a horrible year for most restaurants, and when one of the nation's well-known chefs decided to open his first eatery in Raleigh, there was excitement. Gilbert hasn't yet opened his restaurant, Cut and Gather, and there's no word if it will ever happen. Paulette Dillard, president, Shaw University. It was a very interesting year for the head of one of the oldest HBCUs in the nation. Dillard and her team were recipients of major charitable contributions from companies such as the Lilly Endowment and Apple. Shaw had one of its best years in recent history. Zach Von Cannon, managing director of the Fallon Company. Led by Von Cannon, the 301 Hillsborough Street project made major advances toward its stated goal of a new 19-story tower. Altogether, the downtown Raleigh project calls for two towers, with the first phase completed in the fourth quarter. And finally, Chris Woody, managing partner, Merge Capital. Real estate developer Woody's Park City South mixed-use project is closely watched by city officials as it is huge, some 1 million square feet. In the past year, the project got rezoning and master plan approval and could change the area adjacent to Dix Park. And we'll read a couple of the articles of the nine who will be watched for 2021, and then at the end we'll come back if there's time left. Tunde Satunde, President and CEO, BCBSNC. For the new head of North Carolina's largest health insurer, the new year couldn't be more important. Dr. Tunde Satunde was named the President and CEO of Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina in June, just months into the global health crisis caused by COVID-19. That crisis is among the highest priorities for Satunde. As one of the most powerful payers in the state, Satunde has an outsized role in the health care for millions of patients and providers, setting policy and guiding programs with a massive role in fighting the virus. Already, his organization has taken unprecedented steps. According to Satunde, the decisions BCBSNC has made since the beginning of the pandemic, such as canceling costs associated with the testing and treatment of COVID-19, have cost the company more than $600 million. But with the full rollout of vaccines still months away, the commitments that BCBSNC has made will only continue to drag along. Satunde believes the pandemic is an opportunity for the healthcare industry, meaning not only does he plan to lead his organization and members through the pandemic, but also leverage it to enact a range of changes he believes help transform the industry. Under the previous president and CEO, Dr. Patrick Conway, the company began a statewide push toward value-based care, a model of reimbursement that would replace the typical fee-for-service model. The new model requires cooperation between providers and insurers, with both agreeing to share in the financial risk associated with making payments based on patient health outcomes instead of paying for individual procedures. BCBSNC has the state's largest health systems on board and has been working to bring in a range of independent specialists and physicians. Satunde said the company is still committed to that goal, even rolling out a financial assistance program to providers in exchange for signing on to its value-based care programs. The company will also be a major player in the larger conversation that COVID-19 has spawned about certain challenges in the healthcare industry, many of which were pushed aside by emergency legislation and policy adaptations to clear way for providers to fight the virus. Perhaps the largest of those relates to telemedicine, with governments and regulators allowing for a wealth of new policies that have unleashed the full potential of remote care delivery. Whether or not those policies stay in place will depend on what companies such as BCBSNC believes can work, and Satunde said the company is heading into the new year believing that transformation in healthcare has never been more possible. And that was written by Seth Thomas Gulledge. And we'll go ahead and read the names of those on the list and then come back if needed or if we have time. Peter Hans, President, UNC System. Paul Zarian, Director, Hines. Jessica Brock, Managing Director, Longfellow. James Sills, CEO, M&F Bank. Arvind Krishna and Jim Whitehurst, CEO and President, IBM. Catherine Truitt, Superintendent-Elect, NCDPI. Marshall Adams David, City Manager. And Jim Dayton, President and CEO, BioAgilytics. Now we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle Happenings, written by Managing Editor Dane Huffman. Couple launches craft brewery. A husband and wife have opened a small brewery in Raleigh, looking to find a niche in a market with an unquenchable thirst for craft beer. Phil and Shannon Helm opened Blackfire Brewing October 3rd in a two-story strip building near the intersection of Wake Forest and Whitaker Mill Roads. It's designed to be a modest and cost-efficient start. The brewery was only open Saturdays and Sundays, but is extending its hours to Friday nights as of January 8. Phil Helm, who has a full-time job writing Java code, says he started out as a home brewer and friends told him, "Hey, we'd pay for this." They moved into 2043 Progress Court in November 2019, but upfitting the spot and navigating the permits and ABC requirements slowed the opening. "We kind of pushed around for a while and finally hired somebody who knew what he was doing, and that helped us a lot," Phil Helm says. "A lesson there is hire people who know what they're doing and let them do their jobs." The brewery features gluten-removed beer, as Shannon Helm is sensitive to gluten. Blackfire has found a market there, as most breweries don't offer that. Still, it's a small operation. The shop is only 1,100 square feet, but Phil Helm says that modest start is deliberate to avoid copious debt. "We're making somewhat of a profit, but we are investing that back into the business. We would like to grow, but we're viable at the moment," he says. "That was intentional from the beginning. We were both working parents. Our intent was not to go into debt, and thankfully, we did not have to do that." You aren't from around here, are you? If you're talking with a neighbor and happen to mention the Four Corners, don't be shocked if they have no idea what you were talking about. That's because back in 1970, the percentage of North Carolinians born in the state was 78%, according to Carolina Demography in Chapel Hill. And a big chunk of them were obsessed with college basketball and will remember moments such as when Phil Ford was playing basketball for UNC Chapel Hill and running the four-corner spread offense. But times have changed. By 1990, roughly 63% of North Carolinians were native to the state. And as of 2019, that number was down to 56%. So it's not hard to imagine a time when less than half the state is made up of native North Carolinians. Red Kettle delivers dollars despite the pandemic. The Red Kettles of the Salvation Army of Wake County didn't go empty this holiday despite the challenge of COVID-19. The pandemic had raised concerns at the Salvation Army as it headed into the holiday season and looked to raise funds for its charitable work. But the group still sent out a total of 772 kettles, down from the 1,180 in 2019. Those kettles raised $281,345.94, short of the previous year's $330,855.71, but still a strong effort considering the challenges. The Salvation Army had nearly 7,700 children registered for its Christmas cheer program. The Salvation Army's annual budget was $4.9 million for the fiscal year that closed September 30. Durham Company names Chief Patient Officer. Remember when Chief People Officer became a new title? Well, a Durham Pharmaceutical Solutions company has a new C-suite position, Chief Patient Officer. Parexel has named Dr. Claire Grace to the new position. The company says to reflect the role of the patient as central to the company's mission of keeping patients at the heart of all clinical trial activity. Grace is a former INC or Inc. research executive with more than 20 years of experience in the CRO and biopharmaceutical industries. "I look forward to working closely with our sites and technology partners to improve the patient experience and to further infuse the patient perspective across all studies and further enhance our ability to deliver innovative clinical trial solutions that meet our customers' needs," Grace says. London Flight isn't returning quite yet. The surge in the coronavirus in England is having an impact at Raleigh-Durham International Airport. American Airlines had hoped to restore its direct flight from RDU to London in March, but after Prime Minister Boris Johnson announced new lockdowns for England on January 4, American shifted the restart to May 1. The flight has been suspended since March. Meanwhile, Delta Airlines plans to restore its direct flight to Paris this summer. But again, the coronavirus has a way of wrecking travel plans. And finally, former Chief Justice hired. Sherry Beasley lost her bid for re-election by a narrow 401 votes, and it didn't take her long to land a new job. McGuire Woods has hired Beasley, the former Chief Justice of the state Supreme Court. Beasley conceded the election to Paul Newby on December 12. Beasley was the first African-American woman to serve as Chief Justice. She is joining McGuire Woods' litigation practice in Raleigh as a partner and member of the firm's appellate team. Now we turn to the On Banking and Tech page written by Lauren Onasorge. Triangle banks prep for next round of PPP loans. More federal dollars to flow as businesses try to survive pandemic. Triangle banks say they're ready for another round of the Paycheck Protection Program. During the first two rounds in the spring and summer last year, it was a frantic rally by banks working to turn over as many PPP loans as possible, a task made tougher by a pandemic that had many employees working from home. This time, the guidance from the U.S. Small Business Administration is clear, and with the experience of the previous rounds under their belts, bank leaders say their teams are more prepared. Fidelity is looking forward to participating in the next round of PPP, says Mary Willis, CEO of the Fidelity Bank in Fuquay Varina. We're ready to go, and we're just waiting on the Treasury to formulate the final guidance. Willis and her team scrambled in the first round, working nights and weekends to meet the deadlines and submit approvals for more than 3,600 PPP loans in North Carolina, according to data from the SBA. So, too, did the staff at Raleigh-based Dogwood State Bank, which teamed up with an accounting firm to ensure a smooth as possible process amid changing guidelines from the SBA. We're getting geared up to be fairly aggressive out there in terms of helping small businesses, CEO Steve Jones says. The bank processed 815 PPP loans for North Carolina businesses last year. Larry Barber, CEO of Raleigh-based North State Bank, expects fewer clients to apply this time around. His bank has approved more than 1,000 loans so far. I don't expect a large volume of requests, he says, but I think the hospitality and restaurant segment there will be a lot of folks. They are really, really struggling. Brian Reed, Raleigh Market President of Town Bank, says he's not expecting as big of a response as in the first go-round when Town Bank processed more than 1,400 loans in the state. Most businesses have received their funding, Reed says, noting that this time trade organizations and other nonprofits will be eligible for PPP too. But that is not a huge number overall, he says. And in a section called Restaurant Blues, he pushes ahead without any PPP options. As battered businesses eye a second round of the Paycheck Protection Program, a carry-on entrepreneur left out of the program is worried about survival. Like his peer restaurateurs, Ron Didner has seen his balance sheet hammered. His restaurant, Mookie's New York Deli, is losing money month over month. But while many restaurants across the state secured major cash infusions through the PPP, he was left out. Nor will he be eligible for the second round. That's because for businesses to get a loan, they had to be in operation prior to February 15. Didner's Deli opened last summer. I know everyone is in need. It's great that there is PPP coming, but we need help too, he says. Didner came to the Triangle after working at restaurants in Manhattan. He was recruited to Raleigh to help open LM Restaurants Vidrio. After nearly 4 years, he executed on his dream of opening a restaurant. So he scrambled together two investors, a loan from the U.S. Small Business Administration, and the perfect location. In mid-March last year, Didner had an agreement to buy out what had been Shuck and Shack Oyster Bar in Tryon Village. Days later, Governor Roy Cooper shut down restaurants and bars, initially for just a few weeks, but the pandemic dragged on. For Didner, who had poured his savings of about $150,000, it was too late to back out. Everything I put in would have been lost, he says, or I could persevere and really try to make the best of things. The restaurant opened in July, but Didner still hasn't taken a paycheck as he is supporting 13 employees. I know if I was eligible to get PPP, I would definitely be able to hold out until the summer, he says. It's just going to be about how stubborn I am. And the headline of our next article, Johnston County optimistic about development ahead. 2021 could be a year of possibility for economic development in Johnston County, according to Chris Johnson, economic development director for the county, who says his region is getting plenty of attention from firms looking to relocate or expand. Headquarters, research and development, it happens in Research Triangle Park, the urban core, he says. Then they look to the Halo counties for manufacturing. Johnston County has seen success in securing life sciences investment in recent years, but Johnson says he is seeing interest from multiple sectors, from life sciences to warehousing. For the last 90 days, the office has been on fire with potential projects, he says. Now, whether or not we land any, that remains to be seen. And in a section with a big number, that number is 157. That's how many total recruitment and expansion project possibilities are in the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina pipeline as of now. And finally, in a section called He Said It, a quote from Lister Delgado, managing partner for Durham's Idea Fund Partners, on why he expects some firms it supports to get PPP help. VC-backed businesses depend on growth. If a startup is not growing, it is dying. So now the focus is on getting back to growing. That is where the new PPP will help. And now we turn to the continuing series, The Promise Of. Duo fights to keep business alive. How Tracy and Bobby Outlaw are steering their bakery through the choppy waters of the pandemic and well-heeled franchises. And this story is by Connie Gentry. About this project, the project name is based on a historical reference relating to Union Army leader William Sherman's promise of giving 40 acres to slaves after the Civil War. That promise, which came to be known as 40 acres and a mule, never came through as President Andrew Johnson rescinded the order after taking office. January and February have historically been slow months for retail businesses, but the first half of 2021 looms ominously for retailers that struggled through the initial months of the pandemic, only to face equally or more daunting days ahead. Bobby Outlaw, culinary director and co-owner of Premier Cakes, says the bakery he and his wife Tracy operate in North Raleigh may be able to survive another 6 months. Beyond that, it's hard to say. They need investors to step in or business to return to pre-pandemic levels sooner rather than later. The essence of a mom-and-pop shop, their bakery started in 2010 with executive pastry chef Tracy baking in their home. Within 9 months, the business had outgrown the home and Bobby had resigned his engineering consulting job to step in and manage the day-to-day details of running the bakery. At that time, they were selling their made-from-scratch gourmet cakes to restaurants as well as customers. But when they opened their storefront in the Falls Village Shopping Center about 7 years ago, consumer demand usurped the restaurant accounts. After about a year in Falls Village, business had really picked up and we couldn't keep enough cake in our storefront case, Bobby says. We have a storefront if there's no cake to sell. Well, why have a storefront if there's no cake to sell? So we started selling exclusively to individuals and stopped doing cakes for restaurants. They were selling special order cakes, requiring a 72-hour notice and offering cakes by the slice at the bakery. All of the products were scratch-made using a variety of special ingredients and recipes concocted from their years of traveling across the country, sampling foods from various regions and cultures. More often than not, the bakery was selling out daily. Baking would ensue at 4 a.m. and often continue into the night. As fast as we baked it, it was gone, Bobby says. Then the bubble burst, even before COVID-19 hit. In November 2017, the shopping center leased to a competitor, a national franchise bakery, Nothing Bundt Cakes. Revenue at Premier Cakes took a hit, dropping 25% from 2018 to 2019, with sales coming in around $200,000 in 2019. And in the year of the pandemic, sales plummeted for the Outlaws, in part because the bakery closed for a few weeks, and then reopened with reduced hours, noon to 6, Wednesday through Friday. Pre-pandemic, weddings and special events accounted for about 20% of the sales volume at Premier Cakes. In 2020, those celebrations ground to a halt. While income stalled, expenses remained constant or increased. Paying rent has been one of the biggest challenges, Bobby says, adding, That's what put most businesses out of business. If we didn't have the lease obligations, we could have shut down and opened back later, but the lease made that impossible. Specialty ingredients and bakery staples became harder to find. I'd go stock up on things and store shelves were often empty. Prices have gone up 30 or 40% during this time, Bobby notes. This year, we established accounts with two food distributors. Their prices are more expensive since they deliver, but that frees you to do other things for the business. Time has become an even more precious commodity since the outlaws had to lay off their employees when the pandemic started, going from four employees down to just the two owners. In some ways, the other cake shop in Falls Village has faced similar stresses during 2020. Laura Lenander, co-owner of the Nothing Bundt Cakes franchise, says their store did not close. But when COVID restrictions first came out, we went to curbside only service and we had to reduce our staff. Now the only restrictions are the number of people we can have inside the lobby, no more than six. They've been able to bring back all of their employees, in part because walk-in traffic has remained strong since their store is next door to TJ Maxx. Sales in 2020 were almost comparable to before the pandemic, although holiday sales were much lower because there were not corporate events and gatherings were kept to a minimum, Lenander says. However, plans to open a third location have been put on hold. She and her business partner, Matthew Roughgarden, also own the franchise bakery in Greensboro. Both bakeries in the Falls Village Center were happy to secure PPP loans, although neither was willing to disclose the amount, but that did little to offset the pain of paying rent and utilities throughout the pandemic. The difference is that small local businesses such as Premier Cakes were in it all alone, while Nothing Bundt Cakes received some support and aid from the parent franchise company. They helped us update our online ordering system and provided us with sanitation chemicals, stickers for social distancing, and masks, Leander says. At Premier Cakes, the outlaws spent several thousand dollars to install a takeout window. It's keeping the customers and us safe, but it hasn't really contributed to the revenue stream. We're making ends meet, and that's about it, Bobby says. Unlike the small locally owned businesses and franchise operations, large national retail chains were able to negotiate more lenient terms across the pandemic. For example, the TJX companies, owner of Falls Village Anchors, Home Goods, and TJ Maxx, deferred a large portion of its rent payments to later dates, with many of the 4,500 stores postponing rent payments until the company's fiscal 2022 year. Jeff Nimmer, senior vice president at the Shopping Center Group, manages the Raleigh office for the Atlanta-based firm, which has a portfolio of Class A suburban retail centers from the Triad to the coast, including Falls Village. The company acts as a third-party leasing representative for landlords, and in some cases represents tenants as well. Nimmer lends a broader perspective from his vantage point of working both sides of leasing deals. The patience of landlords is wearing thin. They can't take no rent or less rent, and we may see more fallout coming in the next few months. Specific to Falls Village, he notes the occupancy rate is higher now than a year ago, and the center has signed new tenants in 2020. We brought in a national med spa, Milan laser hair removal, and a local ladies' boutique, At Ease, is moving to Falls Village, he says. There's not a lot of vacancy in the Class A centers, and rents have not come down. The Triangle is a dynamic market which continues to grow with solid retail submarkets. That bodes well for businesses with deeper pockets, but small businesses like Premier Cakes may not survive without more support. In general, customers have a good heart and they're glad to see we're still in business, but they need to patronize our business to keep us open. They'll ask how we're getting along, and we're doing well, but I don't know if they want the truth. We've always tried to give back to school projects and when the neighborhood asks for help, but if we don't make anything, we don't have anything to give, Bobby says. Their dream is the bakery will again become a destination for people and businesses seeking fine desserts, and maybe one day they'll open a baking factory. If we could find an investor who wanted to support our vision and products, that would be great, Bobby says. For now, I'd say we're surviving, but we're not thriving like before. And there's one general news story in the Promise Of section. High-powered coalition has lofty goals for equality. Last month, a coalition of leading CEOs and businesses formed 110, an organization committed to upskill, hire, and promote 1 million Black Americans over the next 10 years. The goal is to make a meaningful, measurable, and lasting systemic impact on racial and economic justice. 110 will connect employers with talent partners, nonprofits, and skill credentialing organizations that support the development of diverse talent and create both job opportunities and sustainable career paths for generations of Black Americans. 110 was founded by Ken Chenault, Chairman and Managing Director of General Catalyst and former Chairman CEO of American Express, Ken Frazier, Chairman and CEO of Merck, Charles Phillips, Managing Partner of Recognize, Chairman of the Black Economic Alliance and former CEO of Infor, Jeannie Romedy, Executive Chairman and former CEO of IBM, and Kevin Scherer, former Chairman and CEO of Amgen and former faculty member at Harvard Business School. The five founders serve on the board of 110. Frazier and Romedy serve as co-chairs of the board. The organization launched with 37 founding CEOs and companies across a spectrum of industries and includes ADP, American Express, AT&T, Bank of America, Cargill, Cisco, Delta Airlines, General Motors, IBM, Johnson & Johnson, Lowe's, Nike, Nordstrom, PepsiCo, Target, Verizon, Walmart, and Whirlpool Corporation. In similar action, the 15% Pledge is a nonprofit advocacy organization that was formed to motivate major retailers to commit 15% of their shelf space to Black-owned businesses. Retailers that have committed to the pledge include Bloomingdale's, Blue Mercury, Indigo, InStyle, Macy's, Madewell, MedMen, Rent the Runway, Sephora, and West Elm. Businesses that support the retail industry have also signed on to the pledge, including Vogue and Yelp. And now we turn to the On Healthcare page in the Triangle Business Journal, written by Seth Thomas Gulledge. Red Hill seeks green light for its key COVID drug. Red Hill is encouraged by the results in its Phase 2 drug study. A Raleigh drug maker working to develop its drug as a treatment for patients with severe COVID-19 has reported positive top-line data from a Phase 2 trial. On December 31, Red Hill Biopharma disclosed preliminary data from its U.S. Phase 2 study of opaganib, its oral drug for patients hospitalized with COVID-19 pneumonia, that's spelled O-P-A-G-A-N-I-B. According to the company's data, the study found the drug demonstrated a consistent trend of greater improvement in reducing oxygen requirement compared to standard of care treatment by the 14th day of the trial. Specifically, 52.6% of patients on the drug no longer required oxygen support compared to just 22.2% in the control group. The study also found that the drug was safe, with no material safety differences between the opaganib and placebo treatment arms. Fewer patients suffered from serious adverse events on the drug than those in the placebo arm of the trial. We are pleased with these encouraging top-line results from our exploratory Phase 2 study, which confirm opaganib's safety and demonstrates promising signals of activity when treating patients with COVID-19 and who require oxygen support, says Dr. Mark Levitt, Red Hill's medical director. Levitt says the company expects the preliminary results to support the company's global Phase 2-3 study, for which the company expects to release data in the first quarter of 2021. Levitt says the company hopes to compile a robust data set to support potential filing of global emergency use applications. The new data comes from a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled Phase 2 trial conducted on patients in the U.S. The trial enrolled 40 COVID-19 patients who required oxygen support. The global trial is being conducted at some 30 clinical sites around the world and is set to enroll about 270 patients. The drug, opaganib, was initially developed as an anti-cancer treatment specifically for cholangiocarcinoma and is still being evaluated in a Phase 2A study in advanced cholangiocarcinoma and in a Phase 2 study for prostate cancer. But the company thinks it is important to see if there is an opportunity for the drug in treating COVID patients. In November, Red Hill said it had linked partnerships to expand manufacturing of opaganib as it preps for emergency use authorization. New program to provide acute care at home. One of the Triangle's largest hospital systems will start providing high acuity care in patients' homes, including for COVID-19. UNC Health announced January 4 an agreement with Boston's Medically Home Group to establish its acute care at home program and bring hospital level care to patients in their homes. According to UNC Health, the program will offer hospital services to patients who would otherwise require inpatient hospitalization for serious illnesses, including exacerbation of chronic diseases, infections such as pneumonia, and post-surgical hospitalizations. The health system says it will also be able to replace hospitalization needs for some COVID-19 patients. UNC personnel or the health system's partners would provide the in-home care. The program works by providing constant monitoring of patients by UNC Health physicians and nurses in a medical command center. Services such as IV therapies, oxygen treatment, and even x-rays and ultrasounds could be administered in the home. UNC plans to launch the service no later than mid-2021 to Triangle residents of UNC Medical Center and UNC Rex. The health system plans to gradually extend the program to patients served by its other 10 hospitals across the state and is evaluating opportunities to offer the service in partnership with other North Carolina hospitals. BioCryst cans COVID-19 program after clinical trial. A Durham company that had been awarded tens of millions worth of federal contracts to study its drug's potential for treating COVID-19 patients says it is ending those efforts. BioCryst Pharmaceuticals has disclosed data from one part of its clinical trial for its antiviral galidesivir, which was being studied as a treatment for patients infected with coronavirus. According to the company, the trial was not designed or sized to demonstrate clinical efficacy, but the results have shown the drug is safe and generally well tolerated. In a statement to investors, BioCryst said that based on the company's ongoing discussions with the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, the company plans to discontinue the pursuit of a COVID-19 indication for galidesivir. Marias files for FDA approval. Raleigh-based Marias Pharmaceuticals has submitted its drug for approval to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, teeing up the potential for the company to begin commercialization. The company said January 5 that it has submitted a new drug application for Kysotrex, its treatment for hypogonadism in adult men, and that's spelled K-Y-Z-A-T-R-E-X. And finally, Nuventra names Roy its new president. Durham-based Nuventra Pharma Sciences announced January 3rd that one of its vice presidents, Daniel Roy, has been named president. And now we turn to the On Real Estate page written by Caleb Harshberger. Epic Games to build HQ at Cary Town Center. Big shift for Center as Epic Games buys site for $95 million. The future of the Cary Town Center has shifted dramatically as Epic Games has acquired the 87-acre site with plans to build a global headquarters campus. The Cary-based video game and software giant confirmed it closed on the property on December 31 in a $95 million deal with Turnbridge Equities and Denali Properties, the developers who bought the struggling mall in Southeast Cary for $31 million in early 2019 and later unveiled major plans for a massive mixed-use project. A representative for Epic Games says the company is still in the early stages of the development process for the headquarters campus. The company said the campus would include office buildings and recreational spaces. We plan to commence development of our new headquarters this year with the goal of converting the property into our new campus by 2024, the representative says. The sale comes 3 months after New York-based Turnbridge and Dallas-based Denali announced plans to break ground in early 2021 on their own plans for the property, which had called for a mixed-use hub called Carolina Yards, with 4 million square feet of space off Carytown Boulevard and Walnut Street. What led the developers to sell the site is unclear. Turnbridge and Denali did not return requests for comment. In a press release from Epic Games, Jason Davis, managing director at Turnbridge Equity, said, "Epic shares our vision for transforming Cary Town Center into a vibrant community space. This sale is further validation of our value-driven investment strategy, and the property cannot be placed in better hands. After years of shifting development plans for the center, we are thrilled the space will be utilized to its full potential and turned into something the town and community of Cary can be proud of." In late 2019, the town of Cary approved the developer's rezoning request for the site, paving the way for up to 1.2 million square feet of office use, 360,000 square feet of commercial use, 450 hotel rooms, and 1,800 multifamily and townhouse units. It's unclear whether any of the Turnbridge and Denali's plans for the site will be included in Epic's project. Stephen Porterfield of Capital Associates represented Epic Games in the transaction for Cary Town Center. And along with this article is also a timeline for Cary Town Center. 1979, opened as Cary Village Mall. January 2015, Sears closes at Cary Town Center as the mall's decline accelerates. May 2018, IKEA drops plans to go to struggling Cary Town Center. February 2019, Turnbridge Equities and Denali Properties buy the 87-acre Cary Town Center from CBL and Associates for $31.5 million. October 2020, Turnbridge Equities and Denali Properties announce total transformation to mixed-use project called Carolina Yards. And then in January 2021, Turnbridge Equities and Denali Properties announce sale to Epic Games for $95 million. And because it's related, we'll now turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook. The headline, Epic's Move Could Transform Cary Triangle. And this is written by Sugata Mukherjee, who is editor-in-chief of Triangle Business Journal. The company was founded in 1991, some 30 years ago. Let that sink in a bit. Epic Games of Cary was just a company with a few developers writing codes for kids and adults to play online games. That was the time when hundreds of new gaming companies were formed within a span of 5 years. Now most of them are gone or have been gobbled up by bigger players in the gaming industry. Not Epic. Headed by founder Tim Sweeney, Epic has methodically expanded its offering on the back of its world hit game series Fortnite, and today provides one of the world's most advanced 3D engine technologies. The company calls itself an end-to-end digital ecosystem for developers and creators to build, distribute, and operate games and other content. But Fortnite is Sweeney's big fish, with some 350 million accounts and 2.5 billion friend connections. According to Nielsen's video game arm Superdata, Fortnite took home nearly $2 billion in sales in 2019. The company says its current market value is in excess of $17 billion. Okay, so when Epic announced it was buying the 87-acre Cary Town Center land for about $95 million, the bean counter folks at Sweeney's offices in Cary hardly flinched. But for the Triangle, it has the potential of being a massive deal with game-changing possibilities. For example, after losing Apple and Amazon's eye-catching projects, Epic now faces a reality check. Should its new headquarters campus be like any other HQ campus across the country? Or should it be a statement-making project that will be revered by businesses, economic development officials, site selection specialists, and workers from all over the world? Sweeney has not weighed in publicly as to what he envisions the campus to look like, but I am hoping it is something that will be jaw-dropping. The Cary Town Center Mall location is attractive, and it has the potential to change the residential and commercial landscape of the town if Sweeney goes big. One may think it took Sweeney almost 30 years to position his company into a gaming powerhouse, and therefore he is not the one to take risks. But make no mistake, Sweeney knows marketing and he knows the opportunities. Just like in 2012, when Sweeney realized he needed more cash to develop the complex gaming infrastructure, he decided to bring in the giant Chinese conglomerate Tencent Holdings as an investor. The Chinese company invested $330 million and now controls more than 40% of Epic. I'm hoping Sweeney will make a statement with the visuals relating to the looks of Epic's headquarters. I'm not suggesting building a structure that looks like Midas, the Fortnite character that has been the epicenter of action, or the Stark Industries building inside the game, but could the campus be a gaming Sweeneyland? Why not have Fortnite characters such as Oro and Singularity splashed across the campus with robots directing visitors to the 10,000-seat Epic Dome to watch the World Gaming Federation World Cup? You get the point. It's a whole new world that could attract young people from all across the globe, offering an opportunity for local job recruiters to showcase the Greater Triangle as a desirable place to live, work, and play. Sweeney could be our Jeff Bezos and Tim Cook combined. Here's your chance, Tim. And now we'll return to the On Real Estate page written by Caleb Harshberger. Local firm buys downtown Raleigh lot. A parking lot in downtown Raleigh changed hands recently, with the new owner envisioning a future high-rise on the site. A joint venture between Raleigh-based real estate firm City Plat and Modalia Capital paid $700,000 for a parking lot near Glenwood South. The property is situated on 0.2 acres at 504 Hillsborough Street, bounded by Northwest and West Edenton Streets, and a block away from Glenwood 1 and the Block 83 development. City Plat principal Pat Moore says the company is currently considering a hotel or condo development for the site, but no official plans are yet in place. This is a piece of property that stayed vacant for a very, very long time, Moore says. The seller, North Pond Partners of Chicago, bought the property as part of a larger assemblage in 2015. The land is currently zoned for downtown mixed use, allowing for up to 12 stories, and Moore says his firm doesn't plan to rezone the property when the time comes to develop. But until City Plat moves ahead with its plan for the site, Moore says the company has lined up a pet-centric retailer that plans to set up shop this year, but Moore wouldn't elaborate on those details at this time. This is the latest venture between City Plat and Modalia Capital of Maryland, and there were unnamed private investors as well. Late last year, Modalia also partnered with City Plat on a $1.5 million deal for a lot at the corner of Glenwood Avenue and Peace Street. The partners plan to redevelop the property, which is currently the site of an auto shop. Developers pay $38 million for final piece of downtown South. 2 weeks after the Raleigh City Council approved a key rezoning request, the group behind the proposed Downtown South project has acquired the final piece of land for the development in a $38 million deal that closed on New Year's Eve. The property includes 44.76 acres at the corner of South Saunders Street and Penmark Drive, and plans for the land call for a massive mixed-use district anchored by a soccer stadium. And in a section called She Said It, we have a quote from Nish Evans, CEO and president of Durham-based Lennox & Gray, on why her firm is paying $170,000 for property in Rocky Mount for its first ground-up development. There's not that much land still available in the Triangle. And in a section called The Big Number, $11 million, an office building near WakeMed Carey Hospital has changed hands. An LLC managed by Carey broker and investor Yezin Hamad and funded by local investors recently paid $11 million for the office property situated at 1400 Crescent Green in Carey. And in our general news stories, Cameron Village project approved for 6 stories, written by Caleb Harshberger. Plans for the redevelopment of an aging condominium community in Cameron Village took a big step forward January 5th when the Raleigh City Council approved a rezoning request. The rezoning allows for up to 6 stories of mixed-use development, clearing the way for Houston developer Camden Property Trust to move ahead with its plans for a new apartment community on the site. The project is situated on nearly 5 acres at the corner of Cameron Street and Bellwood Drive at the edge of the Cameron Village Shopping Center and just steps from Broughton High School. The council approved the request following a public hearing in which no one spoke in opposition to the rezoning. According to plans filed with the city, the request would boost the residential density of the site from 153 total units to approximately 408 total units. Durham startup raises millions to assist the Credit Invisibles, plans to expand credit access to underserved communities. This is written by Lauren Onasorge. A Durham startup hoping to give the Credit Invisibles access to capital has raised millions and is planning to hire in 2021. According to a securities filing, Verify4 Incorporated, led by CEO James Herwald, raised just over $2 million, which includes the conversion of $510,000 in securities reported by the firm in August. In all, 11 investors participated in the round. The firm was founded by Herwald, Michael Turner, and Patrick Walker to help expand access to credit. Herwald is a serial entrepreneur and former investment banker. Turner and Walker work at PERC, a think tank focused on credit invisibility, or the lack of lender access to predictive information about borrower intentions to repay. Their research, according to PERC, shows that credit invisibility, which impacts 3.5 billion people without any credit information available, dramatically constrains financial inclusion. That's the issue Verify4 hopes to solve. The main focus of our business is promoting financial inclusion and trying to expand credit access to historically underrepresented minorities, Herwald says. We'll enable access to those without easy access to credit, Herwald says. I feel there's just a large sentiment among investors that are very interested in helping out people who need it most. James Sills, CEO of Historically Black Bank, M&F Bank in Durham, isn't familiar with the company but says access to credit is a big challenge in the minority community and that any tools or apps to help borrowers overcome it is good for the borrowers and banks. Although the importance of having a high credit score has been marketed over the past 10-plus years, a very large percentage of the minority population have credit scores under 650, Sills says. Right now, Verify4's solution is in the development phase. The company was founded in 2019 and hopes to make its product live by the end of this year. Among its investors is a strategic partner, Herwald won't name, though he says it's a major public company the firm is working with to put out its product. Developer eyes Research Park. Trinity Capital plans massive industrial development in RTP. And this is written by Caleb Harshberger. With work on a large project in Knightdale set to finish years ahead of schedule, Charlotte-based developer Trinity Capital Advisors is setting its eyes on Research Triangle Park. On January 4, Trinity Capital Advisors announced plans for Alexander Commerce Park, a development calling for 441,280 square feet of industrial space across three buildings. The company paid $7 million for the land in December, making up a portion of a 422-acre parcel that the seller, General Electric, has owned since the 1970s. The project is situated on 48 acres off T.W. Alexander Drive across the road from an Amazon fulfillment center. It has yet to receive an office address. Plans for the park call for one 189,280-square-foot building and twin 126,000-square-foot buildings with construction to start on at least one of the buildings this year. We have been tracking this site for quite a while now, says Massey Flippin, partner at Trinity Capital. We consider it to be the best industrial site in the region. The location at the epicenter of the Triangle, the lack of available product, and proximity to major highways and transportation corridors will make it very attractive to a diverse group of users. That initiative has been in the works for about 2 years and kicked off when the company first identified its Eastgate 540 project that's currently underway in Knightdale. That project was set to take 6 years to complete, but last month the company accelerated those plans, announcing it will start construction on the final three buildings at Eastgate 540 this year amid explosive demand from potential tenants. That puts the project on pace to finish 3 years ahead of schedule. Clearly, we're very bullish on the Triangle, Sheehan says. The market continues to remain attractive to users from all over the country because of the quality of life and access to top talent. We plan to continue having a significant presence within the Triangle in the years to come. Trinity Capital Advisors also has offices in Morrisville. In addition to its industrial developments, Trinity Capital has been working on several office and life sciences projects, bringing millions of square feet to RTP and the surrounding area. In November, a joint venture between Trinity Capital Advisors and Connecticut-based Starwood Property Trust paid $208.6 million for the Southport Business Park, a massive office, flex, and industrial park off Aviation Parkway in Morrisville. Trinity Capital Advisors is also partnering with SLI Capital on their Venable Center project, currently underway in Durham. NC's Landis left legacy in banking. Landis remembered for dynamic career in finance and Triangle. And this is written by Lauren Onasorge. After a 2-year battle with cancer, Rocky Mount-born businessman Kel Landis III died on January 2nd. Described by friends and colleagues as a man who forever changed banking in North Carolina, Landis's business accomplishments included his tenure as CEO of RBC Centura to his status as one of the five founders of Plexus Capital. But friends say the legacy he leaves behind goes beyond the resume. When he got passionate, whether it was about business or community or friends, he was committed. Scott Custer, the retired CEO of Yadkin Financial, says he made a difference. He made a difference for a lot of people. Custer worked with Landis for many years at RBC Centura, now part of PNC, as did Steve Jones, CEO of Dogwood State Bank, who remembers a passionate leader, laser-focused on making sure that our customer experience, our banking customers, were top of mind. I think that's one thing that always stuck with me, that passion and energy and relentless pursuit of execution around that client experience, Jones says. Friends say his biggest accomplishment is his family. Landis is survived by his wife, Nina Schlossberg Landis, and his children, Dorsey Tobias, H.K. Landis IV, and their families. The list of Landis's accolades runs long, both in the boardroom and on Jones Street, where he teamed up with policymakers to advise business policy. Landis and then North Carolina Senator Roy Cooper were named on Business North Carolina's list of the state's most promising business leaders for the 21st century back in 1999, alongside people such as Neil Hunter of Cree and Pete Lofton of BTI Telecom. At the time, Landis was president of Centura Bank, working with Scott Custer under Cecil Sewell, CEO. In 2001, the Royal Bank of Canada announced its intention to acquire then Rocky Mountain-based Centura for $2.3 billion, and the deal would make Landis CEO of RBC Centura, a role where he really thrived, Custer recalled. It's like anything you go through a merger. It was interesting working for a company that's owned by a company in a different country, Custer said. Kell was the first CEO after the merger, and he probably got the brunt of the challenges because both sides were trying to figure things out. And we'll finish with the Business Pulse survey. The question, should restaurants and bars be subject to the same COVID restrictions? There were a total number of 137 responses. 62% said yes. 38% said no. And we've run out of time for today's episode, so we'll leave it there. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Anger. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. They believe every life is unique and deserves to be honored so that every funeral is as unique and special as the person it represents. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. 5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.